From the shores of Puget Sound, this is Healthy Homecast. Healthy Homecast is created and operated by HealthyPainting.com. Healthy Homecast is a unique audio source for information, education, consultation, news, events, and fun. Each episode will introduce and connect you with services, products, practices, organizations, and groups that focus on the health, happiness, safety, well-being, charity, and community of all. Find us on the web at www.healthyhomecast.com. And now, your host, Daryl Whalen.
Okay, hello, and welcome to episode 20 of Healthy Homecast. Tony and I are here with Dan Morris, and we will be talking about, amongst other things, indoor air quality. Before we begin, here are some upcoming events that are happening in and around our area.
It's time to spotlight some healthy, fun, and informative events that are happening throughout the Puget Sound area and beyond. Thanks to ExpectationRestoration.com for sponsoring the following info.
This is Daryl filling in for Tony with episode 20 upcoming events. And as Tony would say, alrighty then. First up, we have the Olympia Pier Exploration on November 5th from 8 p.m. until 9 p.m. at the Boston Harbor Marina in Olympia. Join people for Puget Sound naturalists as they shine a light literally on the creatures of Puget Sound. You'll head out on the docks after dark and watch as animals are drawn to submerged lights. What could be better? We hope to see you. Come join us and don't forget your flashlight. The event is family friendly, but we recommend that children under 8 not attend. Free for People for Puget Sound members, $10 for non-members. Bring a flashlight, dress warmly. Space is limited, reservations are required. Contact Gabby Bryan at 360-754-9177, extension 162. Next up, we have Outdoors for All 2011 Gala Auction on November 5th from 5 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. Please save the date for a fun evening to celebrate our supporters, participants, donors, and volunteers at our annual Dinner Dance Auction located at the Seattle Design Center. Doors open at 5 p.m. For more information regarding Outdoors for All programs or volunteer opportunities, please contact info@outdoorsforall.org at 206-838-6030. And last but not least, on November 7th from 9 a.m. until 1 p.m., we have the Nisqually Planting Assistance at the Braggett Knoll Nisqually National Wildlife Refuge. Become part of restoration efforts at Nisqually, home to the largest tidal marsh restoration project ever undertaken in the Pacific Northwest. Volunteers are needed to help with moving and setting out plants for later installation by school children. No experience is necessary, but familiarity with common native plants is an asset. To volunteer, please RSVP to Christina Donhauer at the People for Puget Sound, 360-754-9177, extension 183. This has been Daryl filling in for Tony and the upcoming events.
Please feel free to contribute by sending any upcoming events that focus on health, happiness, safety, well-being, charity, and community to info@healthyhomecast.com. And now, back to Healthy Homecast.
Links to those events will be posted along with this episode. Last episode, we spoke with Jeff Hogan from Killer Whale Tales. And on our next show, we are scheduled to speak to Sherry Newbold about the Northwest Eco Building Guild. She's the president of the Eco Guild. And right now, let's get rolling with Dan Morris. We kind of leave you up to give your own introduction. So why don't you tell us who you are, what you did prior to your recent retirement, and what that was all about, and then to what capacity you've continued to do that in an educational and an inspirational manner. Take it away.
Okay, thanks for inviting me. I think you're doing a great job because education is one of the most critical needs for indoor quality. It's a complex field, and it's poorly understood even by professionals. But my background is a mechanical engineer, and I started the basics of indoor air quality in the early space program. And then I designed and built houses for 15 years. And then in the last 30 years, I started a company called Healthy Buildings, Inc., which is still going as a division of EHS International in Bellevue. And what we do is about 90% of our work is investigating indoor air quality problems of people who have complaints of odors or mold or moisture or irritation or dust. And the other 10% is doing proactive design work or helping school districts and commercial buildings and mostly homeowners figuring out how to prevent indoor air quality issues in their buildings.
Yeah, it's interesting. So so you say you've been doing the building and then you were doing the space thing. What was the catalyst for all of this type of work and from the beginning of your life?
It was very interesting and a hell of a lot of fun and intellectual challenging when me and 75 other engineers are put in a room and said, well, we're going to put four guys in this tube in space and they can't open the window and they can't get sick. And we discovered that almost everything we put in it was off-gassing and causing odors. And so I got my basic education in indoor air quality there. What really launched me into helping people in homes was I built a super insulated house called a thermal built house in 1987 on Whidbey Island. That was a triple glazed, super insulated, had a heating, one of the first buildings in the state that has an indoor air-to-air heat exchanger. And so it had really good ventilation and a big sunroom, and the heat was stored in a well-insulated basement. But the people complained about some odors, and I realized that we were putting a lot of particle board and smelly paints and things in. And from that day forward, I said, we can't just pay attention to energy. You have to pay attention to what the environment is in the homes and what we put in them.
So how many people were talking about this kind of stuff back then?
Well, back then, very few. It started in, actually that building was built in 84, and it was the 70s, of course, was the first energy crisis, and that's where we've went through the first wave of saving energy by making buildings as tight as possible and using a lot of less energy. And that's when the whole field of indoor air quality started, when we realized that you can't just tighten up buildings without providing proper ventilation and keeping a lot of chemicals and gases and smelly things out.
Yeah, coming from where we had been in our history, the cost issue became more important than the actual health aspect. We were just coming out of the era where smoking cigarettes and stuff had just started to become something that people figured out was bad for you.
Right. And what's interesting now is that we're in phase two of the energy crisis. And now we're making supposedly zero net energy buildings and very, very tight passive houses. And so we're creating another wave of the problem. It's just gone into phase B, where we're trying to make them even more energy efficient. And that just makes it more critical you pay attention to what's in the air and ventilation.
So are you saying that the health factor could still be misunderstood and being maybe not paid attention to as well as it should be?
Absolutely. In fact, most of the programs like Green Built Green and Better Bricks and LEED, indoor air quality is the highest hanging fruit, least understood, least adapted of all the points you can get. And so it's still a big issue, much bigger actually than it was in the 80s.
Yeah, I was just like thinking back a couple of statements that you made. I can only imagine the type of materials and products and stuff that that they were using to create indoor air quality issues in the space program.
Yeah, almost everything we put in, all the wiring, everything was plastic, and it was a very tight, small space, and there was no ventilation. So that's where we had a lot of trouble trying to figure out, you know, how to put in activated carbon and zeolite filters to try and capture both the high and low molecular weight compounds that are that were in the environment.
Hmm. So yeah, I mean, for those of us who have been doing taking the step forward to try to learn about this stuff, and from folks like yourselves and some of the other people that we've had on the on our podcast, and they're doing the kind of educating that you're doing around our area and all throughout the world, basically, it's somewhat easier for us to now understand. But I've come to realize that there's still so many people that don't really understand. So can you tell us why this is so important and what benefit this serves us as a whole?
Yeah, I think it's a public health issue, actually. And one of the myths that we need to educate people about is the myth that, well, you can't do anything about smog, you can't do anything about pollution, so you can't do anything about pollutants in your home. Once you build an enclosed space, you can do everything you want, and you have complete control, like you do with the temperature and other factors in your home. You can control and have a much healthier home. And people don't realize that these compounds, even though they're in small amounts, like in parts per million often, but there might be, you know, 200-300 of them, all in small doses, but the synergistic effect of them in combination means that people have headaches, or they have irritation, or they have asthma, and they don't, you know, there's nothing jumps out that tells them what it is. So that's what makes it a complicated field.
Hmm. So you talked about, and it's amazing how something as simple as, for myself, I live in a pretty small place, and I can get a little $10 fan and put it in the window and actually alleviate some indoor air quality issues.
Right. Well, what you've got, a fan in a small space like this works great, as long as you provide ideally a cracked window on the opposite end so that you're moving the air through. And that's one of the biggest issues, is ventilation. And I really believe in spending a lot of time and energy making sure you have good ventilation, because ventilation is the only strategy that controls all pollutants.
Hmm.
You can avoid putting some in, and you can put filters in to take particles out, but you essentially practically can't take chemicals out and VOCs. So ventilation does it all. But in these newer, very super tight houses, they don't want to run even a small, very energy efficient fan, because it might consume 15 or 20 watts. And they're trying to, you know, eliminate all the watts they can.
And then they're running like 100 watt light bulbs over right. That's not even necessary.
Right.
Yeah. And it's like, so people with, so are you saying that even the best fanciest filter made still isn't as good a thing as just general fresh air circulation?
That's correct. Filters are if they're well designed, a good particulate filter will reduce the amount of particles in the air, dust and skin flakes and pet dander and carpet fibers and toilet paper fragments and all the other stuff that's in the air of every home. And they do a pretty good job if it's a good thick filter with a MERV rating of 10 or 12 and above, or above. And if the furnace is running all the time, it has to be. So it doesn't work very well in the summer, spring, and fall because the furnace isn't running enough. But ventilation, we're live creatures, and everything that's alive on the planet needs fresh air, including humans. And so reducing the dust and particulates in the air is not going to make a healthy house.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, I do know from some of the classes that a furnace or an air conditioner or an HVAC system that's not running properly can be even multiple times more hazardous than not running them at all.
And that's one of the hidden hazards that is also not very well understood is combustion safety. And another thing that happens when you make a very tight house is if you have a furnace, which is a naturally vented combustion furnace or hot water heater or stove that's burning natural gas, when natural gas is burning in an environment, it puts out, you know, carbon dioxide and water are the two main ingredients, but it also puts out formaldehyde and carbon monoxide and sulfur dioxide and nitrogen dioxide. None of those are healthy to be breathed. And a lot of times in a real tight house, if you run a strong fan like a downdraft range, it will backdraft the furnace because the furnace is relying on a long, narrow flue to take the flue gases out. But if the house is really tight and you turn on a big exhaust fan, where's the makeup air coming from?
So you're doing the opposite effect of what you really want.
That's right.
And we all know carbon monoxide, isn't that one of the deadliest
gases? It is.
Guesses?
In fact, the state of California requires carbon monoxide detectors in all residences. And I recommend that in any house that has a combustion appliance, furnace, fireplace, wood stove, gas stove, wood stove, whatever, put in a good quality, you know, $80 or $100 carbon monoxide detector because it's odorless and tasteless. And if you are getting backdrafting or a bird builds their nest in the flue or the flue collapses or there's something wrong, you won't know it because it'll put you to sleep. That's what Dr. Kevorkian did with people who didn't want to be around anymore.
Wow. So I imagine a good $80 or $100 carbon monoxide detector would likely last pretty much forever as well.
Well, it will. They're not the most reliable in the world, and I have two in my house, one on each floor, different manufacturers. That's what I'd recommend because it's just like any smoke detector. They're not forever. You have to change the batteries, and it's good to have the combustion of your combustion appliance is checked by a qualified heating and ventilating firm every year.
Yeah, it's amazing some of the things that we do in our lives to take care of ourselves or treat ourselves, and we probably neglect ourselves in so many ways that are probably relatively reasonably affordable and easy to have done if we give ourselves the chance to actually make it happen.
Right, and that's why education is so important, and that's why I'm teaching these classes at the American Lung Association for Healthy Homes for Builders and Professionals. It's important to realize what the issues are and what you can do about it.
Yeah, and for someone like myself who's been in the building and the construction area for over 30 years now, I can tell you that there's there's many, many builders out there and stuff that it's almost heartbreaking to realize that a lot of them don't even really know or understand this aspect of it. And this is I would have to say the health and safety of the occupants is probably the number one.
That's right. But one of the reasons I think for that is that we tend to, in the building professions, think about we're designing and building homes to make them look good, if you're an architect, or to make a profit. And the quicker you can do them and the cheaper you can do them, the more profit you make. And what needs to happen is we have to realize we're doing this for humans. We're doing this for people. So I like to say everything you do in the way of buildings should do as if you're doing it for your mother or your daughter.
Mm. So, and as well we know, it's, So the younger people and the elderly people and the people that have compromised systems anyhow are really, really at risk.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that when you started all this stuff a few years back, there weren't as many people that had a lot of knowledge or even understood it and likely probably weren't even on board with it. There's always a lot of naysayers in a lot of pretty important areas in life. But I would imagine it's safe to say that there certainly have been changes made. There's certainly a long ways to go. But, you know, are there a lot of people doing this type of work now? I mean, not just in the Puget Sound area, but, you know, all over the world in general. Are there people doing this kind of stuff? And is there a natural resource for this type of work?
Yes, it has grown exponentially, and there's several indoor air quality associations and certification organizations out there, and there's lots of people in the field that are called themselves indoor air quality people, but a lot of them are what we call a mold buster type people, where they might have been installing insulation last week and they don't have a really good science background. And they just go out and test the building and find mold and then say they make their money cleaning it up. And one of the things we do not do is we don't do any remediation or cleanup. And it's an obvious conflict of interest. In fact, several of the states in the United States outlaw doing both inspection and remediation. So we're a professional firm that only does investigations and testing and helping people do what's right, and then we might recommend what needs to be done, but we have no association with any of the people doing the work.
So you don't have your cleanup unit in the building next door? And well, that makes me really happy. That sounds like the kind of integrity that I can put my favor behind. So what makes yourself and the business that you created, and I would assume that that the business that it's still going and stuff, that they're honoring the stuff that you've learned and stuff.
Absolutely.
And what makes all of that different? I know you just mentioned some of it, but can you elaborate a little bit more on what makes that different from others in the field?
Right. There are some people who only walk through and look and see what they can see. And unfortunately, you can't see mold in the air. If it's growing on the surface, then it's obvious, and you might. But over half the buildings that we've tested, over 4,000 buildings, and over half of them, there's no visible mold. So an analogy I use is, would you go to the doctor for your physical when you're having health problems and tell the doctor to see what he can figure out by just looking at you? No, you want to have a complete physical with x-rays and blood tests, and that's what we do. We will test the air and the dust in the house so we can get a independent laboratory to find things in the air that are not visible or detectable by carry-around instruments.
It's generally the stuff that you can't see where there's the most on.
Well, you can't see a lot of VOCs. And, you know, one of the problems with paint, as you well know, is it has multiple compounds in it for dryers and spreaders and, you know, or durability and hardness and so forth. And some of them are, you know, quite odoriferous and smelly, but there's others that we can't detect. The humans have a fairly narrow range of what we can detect compared to, you know, pigs and dogs, and many other species, and you can't detect particles in the air, which causes asthma and allergies because they have no odor. They're irritants that affect the mucous membrane or the nose or your trachea or lungs, but they don't have an odor.
Yeah, the truth is that some of the stuff that you might think is the worst based on its smell may actually be safer than the other stuff.
That's right. And that's why it's counterintuitive, and you can't rely just on manufacturers' claims. You might say, oh, look, we put on low VOC paint. Well, it can be low VOC and still be toxic.
Yeah. And the people that have had challenges and stuff in their life and with their health are sometimes, thrown off by odors and stuff where it's actually really not, it's not really justified. Some of the things, just because they smell something and think, oh, I'm getting sick off of it, it might not necessarily be true. It could very well be something that is safe and healthy, and the stuff that doesn't seem to smell at all or may even have a pleasant smell could sometimes be really unhealthy.
That's true, and a good example of that is Glade plugins, which is one of the worst thing that anyone ever put in their home. And what they are is it's an olfactory deadener, so it kills or stops the ability of the olfactory bulb in your nasal passage from picking it up, and then they add a cheap perfume as a masking agent.
Wow.
So anything that has a perfume or odorants in it, it is a problem for people who have multiple chemical sensitivity. And I've had a lot of clients who are extremely sensitive to chemicals, and I think it's important that we pay attention to, because there are canaries. And even though it might not be bothering you and I, if a person who's chemically sensitive is bothered by it, it doesn't mean it's not affecting us. It's just we don't feel it.
Yeah.
So anything that the canaries are telling us, we should be honoring.
Yeah, no, and I understand. I've actually had the opportunity just over the past year, a little over last year, to work with a number of clients that have those types of challenges and stuff. And it is, first of all, this is what I'm committed to in my life. So I'm I certainly can't say that I understand, but I mean, this is the kind of challenge that I've, but it's not easy.
Oh, it's very difficult.
You could use stuff. I often will consult with numerous people to bring a product onto the job and thinking that there's no problem. And then sure enough, they're like, you know what? I had a problem with that last night.
Well, yeah. Well, I work with Dr. Butcher, who's well-known environmental medicine doc here in Seattle. And what we came up with was before you're doing a remodel or a new construction on a product, if you have a chemically sensitive client, is that the client needs to do a sniff test. And there's a short term and long term. And with short term, they put samples of the paint or the carpet or the wood product, flooring and so forth, in a clean mason jar with the aluminum foil under the lid, let it sit in a warm, sunny place for a week. And then they take their pulse and write it down. And then they lift the top and smell it and see if they have any reaction. If they don't smell anything or have a reaction, they take their pulse. If their pulse is changing, it is affecting them, but it isn't affecting them right away.
Wow.
So those are the kind of things. The only person who can decide what's good for them is the occupant.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Our bodies and stuff tell us everything we need to know. And there's those of us who listen to everything out in society for right. The information that we need. And I think that's exactly where the divide lies.
Well, one of the biggest challenges that people in the building trades have, and everyone, is not being able to rely on manufacturers' claims for what is safe. By definition, everything you buy in this country is good, effective, and safe.
That's what they tell you, don't
that's
they?
That's right. And so how do you find out? And that is a real challenge. You have to talk to manufacturers of competing products. You have to talk to builders and architects and homeowners who've had these products in their houses and ask them how they like them. Like some things, like water-based paints, it'll have 8 or 10 or maybe even 20 compounds in it, but most of those are very short-lived. And water evaporates in a few hours or a day at the most, and then the other compounds that are there don't last a long time. Water oil-based paints, as you well know, can off-gas for 6 months.
Yeah.
So that makes a huge difference. People say when you put in new carpets, the Carpet and Rug Institute says, well, leave the windows open for a day or two. Well, how about a year or two?
Yeah. depending on what kind of levels of off-gassing that you're actually, you know, referring to or inferring to, whatever the word is, I've heard that some of the, even just, let's say, latex paints could be potentially off-gassing for years. I mean, it's obviously like an incredibly low level, but there is some measurable degree of it with certain ones. I'm not saying every paint, but I could just imagine with the, is that possible or?
Well, I don't know, actually. I've heard rumors like that. I haven't seen any scientific studies on it, but I do know one of the most harmful products and longest lasting problem products that are put into homes is particle board. It's sawdust and urea formaldehyde. And urea formaldehyde is an irritant and a carcinogen. And that comes out for between 10 and 40 years.
Yeah.
And the reason is it's 3/4 of an inch thick pressed together, and it only comes out on the edges. So it takes a long time.
Nice and ripe.
All right. And that's why it comes out for so long. So you should not use any particle board in a house that you want to, that's healthy, unless it's totally encapsulated with laminate or some other totally solid vapor barrier.
So what is the mission statement of yourself or your business or organization? Since we deal with a lot of companies and stuff, we like to get ideas about that kind of stuff.
Mainly what our mission is to help anyone, whether it's an individual in a home, a school, a commercial building, a restaurant, or even or manufacturing plants, to identify any issues that could be causing health problems, either obvious, egregious ones like, you know, half the people have headaches, so there's a real strong odor or mold growing, you know, on the walls, to much more subtle ones. But doing it on a basis of very strong science, that everyone there has science degrees and most people have master's or higher degrees. And we want to make sure we're doing the best service and take into account the building as an integrated system. We don't just go in and look for mold. We don't just go in and smell things and take some pictures. We do a very thorough analysis of what we see with our Carrier-On instruments, but we also measure the air, the particles and the gases in the air. We do 2 moisture readings in the walls and floors. And we also analyze the dust, the settled dust that's in the house. And a lot of people call us because they have a strange odor. It's a musty odor. And it turns out, I just did one last week for a friend. She thought she had mold, and what she had was bacteria slime growing in the bathroom, second bathroom that she never used. And it was, I stuck my nose in the drain and it stunk. I said, that's the odor. What'll I do? I said, pour a pot of boiling water down it once a month.
Yeah, you got to use that stuff sometimes.
That's right.
So, we're going to take, I'm going to ask you one more question, and then we're going to take a break here.
Okay.
So let's back it all up with one simple question. What is indoor air quality?
It is a field that looks at everything that's in the air of the built environment, and determining what impact, both gross and subtle, and over long periods of time that's in that air that can affect the health and well-being of people. And one of the things that we discovered in commercial buildings is if you have really good air quality, the performance of the occupants can go up anywhere from 4 or 5 to 15 or 20%. So that and some of these things, even though there was no big odors or anything, it's just that if they had the HVAC system set to save energy and not give them lots of ventilation, that the people were just groggy and they didn't know why, because they couldn't pin it down to any source.
Well, you know, I've been alive for a few years and lived in some type of a home, and I never gave much of this stuff a thought. I think we just kind of grow up and we go into our homes and our buildings, and We don't think about it. And it takes those of us that end up getting sick and stuff for really to make it an issue. And this is something that we all need to think about. So, we're here with Dan Morris. And this is episode 20 of Healthy Homecast. And we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Healthy Homecast.
Gravity connects me to the earth, which connects me to people who connect me to myself more honestly. And gravity connects me to the crust, which connects to the leaves on the trees that make it possible to breathe. On the minefield, blessed with naive mind shield, like a helmet. They would tell us that we don't know how we feel or how to connect with other people on the planet. Oh, if we only knew the power in each blue, disillusioned little. In the vision of one resides all, destroy the individual, for this is critical. The self ain't everything, hands to grasp, to cling, to mask material, vastly shipwrecked beings. At last, release the greed amassed with capitalist tasks and contact the mass. Communication is all we have, and dwindling fast.
Okay, we're back. And Tony is out of here. So, once again, we're talking with Dan Morris, and we're talking about, amongst other things, indoor air quality. We're going to get into the some of the more esoteric. We were just talking a little bit about a Krishnamurti during the break, and that's somebody that I really enjoyed reading his books when I was a little bit younger. And so in relation to yourself and the business that you'd been involved with, what are you most passionate about? And it doesn't necessarily have to be about your business. Let's just say in life in general. What drives Dan Morris?
Well, it's changed over the years, but right now I think the most important thing to me is having a peaceful and open mind and understanding how my mind works and understanding how humans can treat each other better. And the sort of the mantra I've been trying to use is to ask myself, before I make any decision, consider others. And that others, not just people, which is true in a building trade when you're building a building, but also the others of plants and animals and insects and oceans and air and soil and the entire planet. Because, you know, it's just being concerned about your own environment is the most critical thing that we do in trying to help people have a healthier environment. But my passion is extending that to the entire planet and being concerned about making a very healthy planet.
Yeah, well, then you're completely eligible for being part of the Healthy Homecast posse, because good. That's exactly, you know, we were just talking about it on the last episode. Where is it that we got the idea that this is actually, as humans, like our environment? Right. Because it is our environment, but somehow we got the idea that we have ownership over it or possess it or some type of soul precedence or right to it. And it's absolutely kind of silly.
Well, I think it's part of the materialistic culture and consumption that we want to have all this comfort and convenience and do whatever we want. And it's the myth of, one of the books I recommended, The Myth of Freedom, is that not understanding that we are all interconnected. In fact, there's one of the Tibetan Buddhist phrases is everything's connected to everything else in an infinite number of ways. Mm. We feel all huffy and smart because we might see one or two connections, but you know, everything is connected to everything else, but we don't want to think about that because that means we have to be much more careful about the decisions we make, not just what we put in our house, but how we treat the planet.
Yeah, and from a building perspective, the way people build and have built and the things that they do and don't consider. I think I sense that people have a general idea that, you know, there is some truth to the idea that everything is going to take care of itself. But my firm belief is that we have some responsibility in honoring our best sense and our best intuition to contributing and participating in that that care.
Well, that's an interesting point, and that's another myth, is that, well, it doesn't matter if I put these smelly carpets or particle board or paints in my house because it'll go away in a while. It won't bother. And several clients have told me, well, I'm not bothered by that stuff, so I don't care about it. Well, what happens is, one of Dr. Boucher's favorite phrases is, if you keep putting pollutants into your body, it's like a glass of water. And you can put it in, put it in, put it in. Eventually, it'll overflow. Eventually, your system will say, can't take anymore. There will be some sort of, you know, asthma or fatigue, chronic fatigue or headaches or, you know, other health issues. And the same thing's true with the planet. You know, the whole planet is very forgiving, you know, and the ocean is vast, and the forests and the soil, people can think, yep, it's not, I'm not going to be bothered with it. But at the rate that we're polluting it, those days are very much numbered. And I think the scientists that understand that, we need to pay attention to.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't quite believe that the planet's level of forgiveness is able to keep up with our degree of pushing against that forgiveness.
That's a really good way of putting it.
I imagine that that there's a lot of talking about all this stuff and this understanding and this integrity and stuff. I imagine that there's a lot of areas in the building trade where people are trying to push through and ignore refute certain ideas about stuff that really, really matters.
Yeah, I think that's obviously true of when you talk about global warming and climate change and, you know, pollution, is that if you only think about yourself and don't care about what impact what you're doing has on the planet, that's what, you know, that's happening in China really extremely now. And we are in no position to complain about it because we've been doing it for 150 years. And then before that, Europe was doing it. So it's going to take a change. Ultimately, it's going to take a change in consciousness to make a fundamental change in what's going to happen on the planet.
Yeah, you sound like you're a bright, outspoken hippie, aren't you?
Of course, that's what I did between being an engineer and building houses.
No, that's awesome. That's exactly the kind of thing that we really embrace here. I think that you could. So I think there's a misunderstanding that, especially in the scientific community, that there's some people believe there's a disconnect with the actual science and knowledge and facts with the feelings and the emotions and all of that stuff. And that's the kind of stuff that we try to let people see, that that all stuff is connected.
You know, it's just like that your mind is connected to your body, and the thoughts and emotions and perceptions, it's all interconnected.
So let's get back into the healthy homes business. And okay. I thought that was it always called Healthy Buildings?
Healthy Buildings, yes.
And that was probably not anybody using those kinds of names at all back then, was there?
Nope.
Yeah. So my business is Healthy Painting, right. and you're starting to see more and more of it. Yeah. So what critical areas or problems are there in your area of service that you offer solutions to?
Okay. I think that people not understanding how the indoor environment affects their health and well-being, and that there's often a lack of qualified science-based people out there selling low-cost solutions to indoor air quality stuff, like we'll come and, you know, clean up your mold, or we'll clean your ducts, you know, and the only reason you're having your kid's having asthma is because you need your ducts cleaned. Ducts are almost never the source. They can be the vector for distributing the problem, and rarely are they the source. Maybe in a dozen cases out of 4,000 did I see them, but and the EPA and others have said from doing studies that it's not necessary to, you know, clean your ducts every year like they're saying.
That could be very well something put out by the duct cleaning
corporations.
So what are some of the solutions? So one thing I liked what you were saying is that you do all the testing and everything, and you become very aware of where the problem areas are, but you don't necessarily endorse any particular outside company or organization to tackle those challenges and those issues. But what are the solutions and what are the answers for many of the indoor air quality issues and challenges that you run into?
The one-liner is your house should be clean, dry, and well-ventilated. And cleaning is often misunderstood, and there's a lot of people that think that cleaning is only an aesthetic issue. Well, there's junk in the floor, the kitchen sink is dirty, so I'll clean that. But it takes real thorough house cleaning, you know, once a week, and then once a year really deep cleaning and then you have to have ventilation to remove the pollutants that are just being in the house. We're shedding 50,000 skin flakes every day, and we've got cooking and cleaning and pets, and all of those things are producing pollutants. And that's why if you're living in a house, you need, and you're breathing in the house needs to breathe as well. And the dry part is a lot of the homes in the Northwest have damp basements, especially the older homes, mm-hmm. where they didn't moisture-proof the outside of the concrete at all or very well. And then chronic moisture, either in bathrooms or in basements, will cause, if you leave anything with cellulose in it, wood or drywall, for example, or carpet wet long enough, it will grow either mold or bacteria. And so that's why the dry part is important.
So explain the connection or the missing connection between indoor air quality and green buildings. So I know that I've had the opportunity to be a part of some of the great classes that you facilitated. And the one thing I'll always remember is that a green building isn't necessarily a healthy building. Would you care to elaborate on that a little bit?
Yes, that's one of the biggest myths out there. In fact, last week, the ASHRAE, which I'm a member of, American Society of Heating and Ventilating Engineers, published a study that says green buildings could have negative effects on health, negative health effects. And what happens is, as we were talking about earlier, that there's so much focus on saving energy that if you look at the amount of points that's available, and especially those that are achieved in the LEED program or other green certification programs, it's energy is the biggest. And then there's some, you know, saving water and materials and so forth. And indoor air quality is sort of an afterthought that they have to put in because they're supposed to, whatever. But there's been several studies, a new one last year of 108 new buildings, fairly new, between 1 and 7 years, 8 years old, I think, by Bud Offerman in San Francisco, where he studied, did a really good, thorough analysis and vigorous testing of buildings 1 to 5 years old. And he found that about a third of them were unhealthy. And these are new, and many of them were, you know, LEED certified, supposedly, you know, energy efficient buildings. And the biggest thing that they found was people did not understand how the ventilation system worked. It wasn't installed properly or operated properly. So they're still, even though the buildings are better than they were, and as you know, paints, for example, which started in the 70s, where they started making, you know, better paints, there have been big improvements in carpets and paints and flooring, and those are all good, but there's also been, the buildings are getting tighter and tighter, so it takes less and less off-gassing to cause problems in a very tight house.
Yeah, and then also the fact is that there have been a lot of improvements, but that doesn't mean with all products and stuff, so they could very well be not any better or even potentially worse.
As you found out, you probably heard about the Chinese drywall.
Oh, my goodness.
That was, you know, not only making people sick, it was rotting, corroding all the wiring in the house and so forth. That was an extreme example, but there, yeah, you still have to pay attention. And they're introducing new products, new engineered products, new glued together products. We're getting further and further from the natural products. Like there are 500-year-old buildings in Northern Europe that were built out of with stone foundations and big beams. And they're healthy, and they've been that way for 500 years.
Yeah. You know,
but now we don't have anything that looks like a tree, come from a tree anymore. It's all ground up. It's glue and particle board.
And not to mention it's 3 years old, and it's already like we had the building, I think it was within the last 9 months or 10 months downtown, that entire like city block was like 5 years old that they had to pretty much – it was multi-million dollar construction that was completely, pretty much rotted away, and it was 5 years old.
Ephes artificial stucco is Ephes exterior insulated finished systems. About when they first started putting them in the 80s, 90% of them leaked.
90%
of them leaked, and about 25% were total, had to be totally torn off. So a lot of these new products, the disadvantages, is they only tell you the advantages, and the disadvantages won't show up for 5 or 10 or 20 years. And then, of course, the manufacturer and the builder and the installer is gone, and you're dealt with figuring out how to get rid of the dry rot and mold in the walls.
So I've been in the painting business for many years, and it was 20, 25 years ago. I come from Ohio, and so we have pretty extreme weather there as well. And they were putting that certain kind of siding on the outside of the garages and the houses that was completely, like, rotting away.
LP siding, or Louisiana Pacific.
What
it was, it was particle board.
Yeah.
And they just put a coat of paint on it. And particle board is extremely susceptible to moisture. It expands and deteriorates. In fact, I have two daughters living in Hawaii, and you can't use particle board anywhere in the house. It disintegrates even without getting wet, just from the high humidity.
Yeah. And they were putting it on the outside of the houses in, like, areas. Yeah, it's really, really something. It's pretty heartbreaking. So let's see. Do you want to get into? We've been talking a lot about ventilation. Would you care to elaborate a little deeper on what is the theory or practice of ventilation and why it is so important?
Ventilation is greatly understood and misunderstood. And one of the biggest misunderstandings is, well, we have a paddle fan, so that's ventilating the house. The room, at least. And it turns out it's not. It's actually making it worse. But moving air around is called circulation, which is also needed. But ventilation is exchanging stale, moist air in the house for fresh air. It's taking out the pollutants and the dust that's in the air of the house and replacing it with fresh outdoor air. And if you want a very energy-efficient building, you use a heat recovery ventilator, which can recover 60 or 70% of the energy that's being lost by bringing in fresh air. And people say, I don't want to have ventilation. It causes drafts or it costs money. And I'll say, you can't have a healthy building without ventilation. And they make very, very efficient fans now. Panasonic bathroom fans, the best made, as far as I know, and their 50 CFM, real small for small bathroom fans, consume 13 watts. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
What does that cost? You know, 8 cents a month or something.
Yeah, and they're not that expensive.
No.
Either. The prices have gotten a lot better. Right.
So that's one of the biggest things. And the other one is ventilation efficiency. And that is much more tricky. And because if, for example, the fan you have in the window right over your sink, that will take air from washing dishes or cooking there and take it out. But where's the makeup air coming from? And if you are getting air from one side of the kitchen to, or the living room or grand room, great room out the other side, but how does fresh air get to the people sleeping in the bedroom with the door closed?
It doesn't.
It doesn't. And a lot of these new, energy efficient things that where they make one unit size small air to air heat exchangers in some of these townhouses, they put it in the ceiling of the hallway, and it takes the warm stale air out of one side, and then 18 inches away it brings fresh air in. Well, that's doing a great job if you're standing in the middle of the hallway, but it is no way that can bring fresh, remove pollutants and stale moist air from bathrooms and bedrooms and replace it with fresh air. You have to have a system that brings the air to where the people are.
It's what cross current, right?
Right. Cross ventilation. That's a really good way of thinking about it. Ideally, you take the warm, polluted air from bathrooms and kitchens, which is the two biggest sources of pollutants in most occupied homes, and bring fresh air into living rooms and bedrooms.
Great. Well, listen, believe it or not, I think we darn near took almost an hour.
Well, it's a wonderful subject. We can talk about it more.
We'd like to try to keep the time down, but we're definitely going to have you back. We've got a number of things that we haven't touched on. I've really enjoyed talking with you. I want to get a couple of quick things out of the way to end up. First of all, what should we post as a way to contact you or to get some information about either yourself or your the educational things that you do or your company?
Okay. You should call 425-455-2959, and that is the home of both Healthy Buildings and EHS International, and asked to speak to either Clinton or Randy. They're the full-time indoor air quality people that are there. And we also can look online for healthybuilding.com, that's without an S, or EHSINTL.com.
And tell them Dan Morris sent you.
That's right.
And we will be posting that information along with the episode. So I think, you know, we got into a lot of great stuff, and we, at times, we got into some areas of understanding that this is important and critical to some degree. Why don't we end out with something positive or inspiring? Is there something that you could point out some of the changes or some of the information or something in the field that is promising that you could share with people as we end out here?
Yeah, I think there's some really good organizations. The American Lung Association is one. The Healthy Building Network on the web is incredibly good information, and they do postings regularly. And the Pharos Project, the Pharos Institute, pharos.net, is they have the best information on looking at all the materials and how it interrelates with building. And GreenGuard is another really good one for resources. So there are some good things happening. Another pushing the envelope one that's just way, way ahead of lead is called the Living Building Challenge.
I was just going to mention right? that. Yeah.
And I've worked with them, and they're doing some wonderful things. They're the only people who say you cannot know if you have a healthy building unless you test for it.
Yeah.
It's the only people in the continent that does that. And it's true, because you can, if you just rely on what the architect or the builder said, hey, it's fine, it's healthy, I put good stuff in, you don't know unless you test it.
And in our next episode, we will talking about testing, because what was was it the 3-year or what was the, third party.
Third party testing, right.
We're going to get into like the third good, party good. Testing and stuff as good. Well. And so this has been episode 20 of Healthy Homecast. And on behalf of Tony Freiss and myself, Daryl Whalen, we've been here with Dan Morris. And it's everybody be healthy, be safe. I just came up with a cheesy little tagline that I never said before, but I do that sometimes. But we'll see you next time.
Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
Thank you for listening to Healthy Homecast, brought to you by HealthyPainting.com. Your feedback is important. Please feel free to contact us with any comments, questions, or suggestions you may have, including info pertaining to podcast guests or to upcoming related events. You can call us at 206-650-4587 or send a direct email to info@healthyhomecast.com. Be sure to check back often. New episodes coming soon.